you very much. It's my pleasure to be here. I really do appreciate the opportunity. And the only thing I really want to do is just clarify one or two comments. They're accurate, but just so you understand the sequence of it, the governing board, when we met with what we call kind of our constitutional convention in January, was not at all backing away from the notion of an international branch. In all honesty, it was simply a case of taking so much change forward at one time with the sections and the rest of it, we felt like, and there are a lot of very important details in the context of creating a branch, that we just felt like it would be best in the interest of the society to take the time before proposing that as part of the overall renewal, take the time to step back, get things organized, get our ducks in a row, if you will, and to have the International Affairs Committee the and their colleagues an opportunity to have the chance to really map things out and make a conscious decision. So there was general interest on that. I won't say it was necessarily uniform, but there certainly is interest. So thank you for the opportunity. This is, I think, a really exciting time in ESA, and I want to share with you just a few things in terms of topic. Just enough about the renewal overview to kind of set the stage. I don't want to review the whole thing with you because hopefully you're familiar with it, but just enough to set the stage in the context of an international branch possibility, the rationale for an international focus, how to pursue an international branch, a little bit about the how-to if you so choose to, and really a challenge in some context in terms of thinking differently about entomology, the ESA, and how it fits into the world. In terms of a governance design criteria with regard to the renewal, it was really broken down into a few key principles and areas of focus. So one is fundamentally to streamline. I mean, if you think about how the ESA of today came together back in 1953, it was really a merger of sorts of two already existing organizations. Perhaps more out of necessity than really desire, and for some reasons, and so there was a lot of keeping of complexity or maintaining complexity of the two organizations, and so a lot of what the renewal is about was really trying to streamline the governance since we've had those years to come together and really get our own identity, our own focus, new capabilities and ownership for results. The key here really was with sections in terms of developing ownership, responsibility, accountability for delivering to the membership some of the important things that need to be delivered in the key capabilities of public and science policy, fostering interest in entomology, program development, and continuing education, and really empowered sections to act on behalf of their membership. One of the great strengths of the ESA is our tremendous diversity from sections A through section F. It's tremendous. And it really does say a great deal about the capabilities within our society individually. But that diversity sometimes can work against us when we're trying to get out there and make some specific progress on some specific areas of interest. So we desperately tried with this renewal to find the right balance between valuing and building on that diversity, but at the same time finding ways to make progress in certain areas. In terms of streamlining, what we are proposing or have proposed and the membership has approved is really we currently have 14 official governing entities in the section world today. That's not just the six sections, but it's also the eight subsections, each of which have a chair, a vice chair, committees, and those kinds of things. And the new structure, which will be in place a little more than 24 hours, has four sections, and so we've really streamlined from 14 to four, much broader responsibilities in those four. But our sincere hope, of course, is that we haven't lost any of the interest in those other areas, and so we developed the concept, elegantly simple, I think, of member networks that really can take these topical areas and develop into whatever they would like without the encumbrance of a lot of administration or our bureaucracy. The structure from 1953 to 2007 for sections fundamentally was to identify symposia of topics at the annual meeting, and they do a great job, and they're continuing to do a great job. That group I saw come together personally this year under the leadership of Bob Peterson and really put together just a dynamite set of a program here, 74 symposia, a record number of submitted papers, and the rest of it. And they also would exist to populate ESA committees, standing committees, and so forth and so on. And that was fundamentally in about 2 hours, 3 hours a year of a business meeting, what they did. And of course, the program committee works between those periods of times. What we're asking them to do going forward is quite different. It's to identify the symposia topics. That has not changed. And the president and the vice president for each of the four sections will be part of the program committee. They will still, of course, be populating the ESA central committees, but they will take ownership for four of our five key capabilities that we're saying is really part of the overall renewal. I've already alluded to these: public and science policy outreach, fostering interest in entomology, program and issue leadership, and continuing education. So that's really the core of what this whole restructuring was about. So empowered sections to make a difference is really what they're about. In these areas, you can imagine any number of topics. And in fact, we've had really very successful 3 days of very intense workshops with the section leadership councils already to help them or to facilitate with them what kinds of topics, what kinds of focus of area focus they might want to take on. And there are things such as insecticide, transgenic crops resistance, student development forums across departments, bed bug resurgence from a program standpoint, and biological control risk. These are all ideas, and there's many, many other ideas within each of the sections that they're looking at. We also have provided them funds, $50,000 across the four sections, to be able to do the things that might support these kinds of priorities. So they are really moving in a very active manner. And again, just to remind you, we also have a number of member networks. And member networks is an option for the international community, and I think Phil Mueller is going to talk a little bit about that. But the networks really are not organized governance bodies within ESA. They have absolutely no entitlements at all. But we do provide a lot of encouragements, and we've purchased software that hopefully will be very useful. It's called Socius software, and if you want an image, it's kind of like a MySpace for associations, where they can create their own listservs, their own polling capabilities. It's self-managing. You don't need an IT professional or anybody working with that. And this is just a sampling. We already have, I think, 32 of these networks who have stepped forward and said, we'd like to get started. And so that momentum is just now starting to roll. And if you look at this list, you can imagine a little bit about the complexity and difficulty the governing board had in trying to figure out, you know, how we would set up sections. Because you could argue, and I think just about everybody on this list did argue, that they should be a section. But that just doesn't make sense from a governance standpoint. It does make sense from a program standpoint. It does make sense from groups of individuals who have common interests and need to get together and talk about their profession and so forth. But from a governance standpoint, it really didn't make a lot of sense. So the network system seems to be working well. But as I say, they're not governing entities. They're not regulated. And they're not entitled to anything from ESA, anything more than what an ESA member would be entitled to, of course. They are self-forming. They are welcome to use ESA as an umbrella organization, and they are open for access to ESA encouragements that I've already described. So what are our global aspirations long-term? Again, looking across this in terms of how we're structured, there is essentially in the new bylaws that take effect tomorrow, there are no changes whatsoever virtually in the branch system. And if you're interested in all the boundaries, you can see it. But there are some non-U.S. Territories already included in our current branch system. Southeastern branch includes Puerto Rico. Southwestern branch includes most of Mexico. North Central branch includes portions of Canada. Pacific branch includes portions of Canada, Mexico, and Pacific Islands. And Eastern branch includes portions of Canada. So if you look in that, each specific area and territory within our bylaws is specified, and none of that has changed with the renewal. But there's also clearly a lot of areas that are not in there. And one thing to take note of, however, is that it's probably the fastest, the group that does not fit in those areas is some of the fastest growing areas within ESA. Right now there's 438 members that are not geographically able to fit within any of those five areas. That's about 8%. To be honest with you, that's about the size of the Southwestern branch in terms of its total membership. The total number of countries represented in that is 78 countries. And that's not the only letter that I received over the course of the year in terms of where do I fit, because it is a fairly recurring question in terms of where people fit. So is there a clientele? Is there a need? Is there some level of desire for some branch affiliation or association within ESA? I think clearly there is, and it's a growing one. So should we have an international focus? Well, one way to take a look at this is to say, well, what does our vision say? Because we have spent some dedicated time working on an organizational or association vision, what's our mission, and are there some suggestive signs, other than what I've just shared with you, of demand for any kind of international growth? Well, our vision statement, I'll just take a couple seconds here to read it. The Entomological Society of America will be recognized by peer associations, the scientific community, and the public as the best forum for scientific exchange of entomological knowledge, leading to a record of positive influence within public and private institutions where this information is essential. So there's absolutely no limitation in that statement at all in terms of in a particular area or in a particular field. So it clearly is wide open that kind of influence, and in a small and a shrinking world, there's even more opportunity to interpret that as an opportunity to have a bold and broad vision. And the mission statement, which aligns with that, is that the Entomological Society of America exists to promote the science of entomology. The Society accomplishes this through disseminating original research and perspectives leading to a continuous stream of discoveries and applications relevant to the science, creating productive opportunities to stimulate new ideas and capitalize on the diversity and varied perspectives of the membership, and expanding the basic level of understanding about insects and related organisms through outreach to stakeholders of all types. So when you read that, you could almost interpret that as there's even more of an opportunity to carry this mission forward in many parts of the world that are outside of our current branch boundaries. And I think for the most part, and certainly my limited interaction with the International Affairs Committee has been that really, again, the growth area and an area where there's tremendous opportunity to fulfill our mission as we've stated it. What are some suggestive signs for an international focus? Increase in proportion of total ESA membership, I indicated that. The majority of growth potential, I think most people believe, I personally do, is outside the current branches. That's not to say there aren't more members within our current branches that could, or more individuals or entomologists that could join. And we're very hopeful the network concept will bring those out that are kind of on the fringe and find ways to and mechanisms to affiliate and bring in, you know, those who may affiliate presently with molecular biology or may affiliate with some other area of zoology or agriculture. But we do believe that the largest opportunity is for us to have a participation with folks outside those major branches. I think another suggestive sign is just how active and sustaining the leadership on the Standing Committee on International Affairs, the members have been. I say this frequently, that committee is one of two that year in and year out, two or three, they all do their jobs, but that committee, with along with one or two others, are the ones that really do an exceptional job. And to me, that is an indicator that there's a demand, that there's some interest, there's some dialogue, there are some relevant topics that go on year in and year out. It's not a flash in the pan. So that, to me, is a suggestive sign. The proportion of attendees and participants at the ESA annual meeting. Now, regretfully, I don't have that specific data right now in terms of the breakdown, but I can tell you just anecdotally, from year to year, I have seen more and more and more participation from folks outside of our 5-6 branch meetings, whether they're members or not. This meeting draws a lot of folks. We have well over 2,700 participants at this meeting, and I would venture to guess that a large proportion of those folks are outside outside of those branch boundaries that we have today. And I do personally believe it's the fastest growing. So that's a suggestive sign. And also the expanding reach and authorship of ESA journals. It's a very fast growing rate. And it's a key focus, really one of the key focus elements of our five-element publication strategy, which the Governing Board has recently passed, and that is to have greater international participation, greater international reach with our journals. So that certainly lines up very nice. I think Steve Clement's got some very intriguing data to suggest some of that's already happening. Cyber-connected world through technology. I mean, folks, just 5 years ago, we were using 2x2 slides. So, and now we're all networked together and all kinds of cool wizardry going on. And it's going to only get better and faster and quicker. I know that we've already got a few experiments, if you will, in terms of connecting overseas through video conferencing. The Governing Board actually had a couple meetings this year with kind of a live meeting network where we didn't have to physically get together. The technology is moving at an incredibly fast rate, and it's enabling things that we would not have thought possible. So I don't know what it will look like and how we'll utilize it, but I do know it will change and there will be options to connect the world together. So that is a suggestive sign as well. What are some of the benefits of a branch? And everything has benefits and not so much benefits, but the benefits of a branch, I believe, one is that it is an ESA governance unit. It's clearly part of the bylaws. It's one of the governing units of the ESA, and therefore a governing board representative would participate. A representative on ESA committees, for sure, not just international affairs, but all the committees, awards, et cetera, and the governance structure themselves as a branch. The staffing services, such as membership services and financial services, would be availed to the branches just as they are currently, or to an international branch. The infrastructure for self-determination initiatives, meetings, membership drives, would be a part similar to a branch. And instant membership, because you already, there are already 478 or whatever that was earlier that are looking for a place to have their net, so it would be instant automatic membership as opposed to going out and having membership drives. Benefits of a network, if that's an option, is, again, freedom to operate. You're not governed, so you're not encumbered by that. No governance or regulation, initiation of your own committees as desired, and branches can, by the way, do that too. And you can arrange for dues as you want on that, whereas branches are not allowed to solicit dues as part of the ESA Central. However, you can collect fees as part of a meeting. I won't go through the details. These are publicly available on the web in terms of the bylaws, but it's very clearly spelled out on how to modify the boundaries of a branch and how to create a new branch within our new bylaws. And we had a very good discussion on that within that, and basically it just makes modifying Section 4 and Section 1 within the branch portion of the bylaws. Suggest enablement of multiple branch membership. This is one point I would make, is that I strongly suggest if we go this way that we enable flexibility so that members can join more than one branch. So if you live in California, you're part of the Pacific branch, but you can also be part of the international branch. And that gives flexibility. You would have a little bit additional fee. Officers, they only require president, treasurer, and governing board representatives. The annual meeting would be your option. Some meetings are optional. You don't have to have a branch meeting. You could tie it to the ICE every fourth year. You could tie it to the annual ESA meeting. The other 3 years, ESA will provide program enhancement funds to branches, just as we do the other branches. The suggestion of an international area is to find a way to unite this, and this is not in a structural way, but more in some ways a spiritual way to bring the entomology community together in somewhat of a multi-national approach, a United Nations of sorts. The synergies could be in a number of ways if you choose to use them from an overall services standpoint. It could be in terms of just the diversity and inclusion. The individual identity is not at risk here. There's no intent for any takeover. It's really an association. And certainly the professional and personal enrichment that we all get when we work with other cultures and other groups. So my recommendation is to focus on the purpose first. Function should always precede form. Don't get too worried about the organization so much as what you're going to do with it. Think big about the possibilities. Renewal, in every sense, is always an evergreen topic. It's not a one-time thing. Get in front of the trends and be a trendsetter, whether it's through the technology uses or through other areas. And as with this renewal, don't fear change. Put ESA in a global leadership role to have that kind of influence. So thank you for the opportunity to share my thoughts.